Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. For decades, I've been preaching about the importance of a regimen of basic supplements that everyone should consider part of their daily health routine. So I came up with an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. The very same supplements I take myself and prescribe for my patients. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com and check out my Intelligent Medicine Starter Kit. It's a short list of the basic supplements that I recommend as a starting point for those looking to take control of their health. They're the essential elements of a basic program that everyone could benefit from. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to DearHoffmanStore.com. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast, and by the time you listen to this, for many of you, a very happy holiday season and a Merry Christmas and perhaps a Happy New Year. We're nearing the end of our cycle.
Yeah.
This is not the end. It's just, until we meet again on the other side of 2019. With me today is Layla Mutin, because it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. How are you doing today, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you?
Very well, thank you. And I just wanted to share an interesting story with you, which is, and we're very pleased to have on board as one of our sponsors, Plus CBD Oil, or CV Sciences is the manufacturers of Plus CBD Oil, and their website is pluscbdoil.com, America's largest and most reliable source of phytocannabinoid products, the legal
phytocannabinoid kind.
Yep, derived from hemp. And good news on the hemp front, there was a part of that farm bill, the monstrosity. It's always like one of these omnibus bills where, a lot of riders and compromises and give and take. And, they did not break through the subsidy ensnarement that we have, whereby we help to support, sugar manufacturers and manufacturers of corn that goes into high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're still addicted to those substances with economic incentives provided by the government and incorporated in the farm bill. But one good aspect, I think we might have touched upon it last week, is that hemp cultivation is no longer going to be as severely limited in the United States and restricted because they're now realizing that it's okay.
Yeah.
And
just like your linen shirt.
Yeah.
That's organic hemp.
you could buy, I saw some hemp sandals once. Push comes to shove, things get a little dicey. You can just, shred your shirt and roll it up in some papers and smoke it.
Yeah. Yeah, please don't do that. Please don't try this at home.
Don't smoke your shirt.
Don't smoke your shirt.
But anyway, so interesting article. And, I think this is one of those clickbait headlines. But nonetheless, there's some underlying basis for them making these claims. Recent study that was funded by the National Institutes of Health at California Pacific Medical Center.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's California. It's a lot of... That's where they smoke a lot of pot. they found that CBD inhibited a key signaling molecule that is responsible for most of the progressive and invasive behavior of breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little bit of a reach to say that if you take CBD, it's going to prevent breast cancer or it'll cure breast cancer. I wouldn't go so far, but, it sort of points to the really exciting potential, the ancillary benefits, that it's not just a mild anti-anxiety or sleep aid, that it may have anti-inflammatory properties. And we see that in colitis, where it relieves symptoms, makes people feel more comfortable, less pain, cramping, but also it may actually have an anti-inflammatory effect, like some of the herbs that we give these patients, like curcumin and boswellan.
Yes.
So, just share that with you, and we're excited to be on the cusp of the CBD revolution because we now recommend CBD products through one of our sponsors, CV Sciences. So, with that acknowledgement, Let's move to some of the questions. And we have one that is a really a nice way to end the year. It's a, it starts with a question, but maybe you could read the very nice testimonial in there.
Yeah, this comes from Tom. Tom is a registered nurse. Thank you ever so much, dear Layla and Dr. Hoffman. Thank you ever so much for the advice last February given to me on the show to try giving up dairy to see if it would help my psoriatic arthritis. I gave up dairy, and within a week, I've had a substantial and life-changing improvement in my lower back pain.
Wow.
May good karma come your way. Oh, how wonderful, Tom. In researching psoriatic arthritis, I stumbled onto a disorder associated with autoimmune disease that got a lot of attention 10 or 20 years ago. But not anymore.
We need a cough button. You know, when I'm on the radio, there's what's called a cough button. You're familiar with that because you've been broadcasting, right?
Yes.
And there's this little button on the console that says cough.
Where is it? Oh, yes.
But there is not. There's no cough
button. But
there
is not. That's a real cough, ladies and gentlemen. Tom is also suggesting for future shows, how about interviewing an expert naturopathic rheumatologist and talking about the hazards of bovine milk consumption.
Okay.
In autoimmune conditions, especially something like psoriatic arthritis. I'm extremely grateful that you continue to produce a free podcast that is of such great benefit to listeners like me. I know that your research and show prep time represent tremendous level of dedication to the concept of helping others without expecting anything in return. At times, I sense some listeners do not fully appreciate the fact that both of you make personal sacrifices to keep these podcasts free and of the highest quality.
Mm. Well, you know, it is a personal sacrifice because it's kind of cold here in New York, and I'm really kind of wanting to get a pair of shoes because walking barefoot to the studio through the snow and sleet, you know, it is a little bit of a hardship, but it's worth it.
But it's worth it.
So we do make sacrifices.
We do make sacrifices.
And eventually, you know, maybe we'll get a GoFundMe site so that we can buy a pair of shoes for...
There we go. So we don't have to trudge
barefoot
through
the snow. Yeah.
Yeah. Tom says, I was an RN for 33 years and became very disillusioned with the abject greed in the healthcare system. So your show is a beacon of hope. The tendency of human beings is to take things for granted, but every time I download your shows onto my iPod, I'm reassured that good people are carrying on the good fight. Tom, thank you so much.
And you've made our holiday season. That's a really wonderful end of the year gift to us.
Yes.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. And we'd love to hear from people who've, through our advice and through our guidance, have achieved higher levels of health. It's always very gratifying. That's what we are here for.
Yeah. And I want to note something about psoriatic arthritis.
Sure.
I was having a conversation with a new patient on the phone today from Maryland who has psoriasis, not psoriatic arthritis. But what's interesting is the gold standard autoimmune diet is the removal of gluten and dairy. Sometimes gluten alone can do it. But in the setting of psoriasis and psoriatic arthritis, I find that the condition does not totally go into remission until the removal of all dairy.
Right.
Now, cow's milk casein, that's the protein found in all animal milk, but cow's milk casein is particularly problematic in autoimmunity. So many people are able to tolerate goat's milk casein or sheep's milk, and they do okay, but not, in my experience, in the setting of psoriasis.
Well, there's this thing about the alpha 1 and alpha 2 milk.
There is that.
Yeah, you know, there's the alpha.
Yeah. The 2, which is supposed to be better. Don't hold me to
right.
that.
Right. No, that is supposed to be better.
It is.
The Holstein cows that they use are cattle that produce what's called, I think it's alpha 1 type of casein.
Yeah.
And the alpha 2, they actually advertise this as a better form of milk. Now, how this came up recently in a podcast was... during a radio program, we got a question from a guy who is in Israel, and they're touting camel's milk. Well, of course, you know, it's a lot easier to get camel's milk in Israel, I presume, than in Spokane. You know, so it right?
Yeah.
Although, you know, it's kind of a little arid.
Kansas City.
It is a little arid in Spokane. You know, it's just kind of like rolling hills. But so the point being that they claim a lot of benefits. That's good for autoimmunity. That it may, they even tout it as an autism cure. Mm. And why that is because it's thought that the alpha 2 is more congenial to the human immune system than the alpha 1. However, that is sort of controversial science.
Right, right. So the jury is still out, but
yeah.
I don't see the harm in switching to an alpha 2 milk from an alpha 1 milk to see if there's any different. But bottom line, we don't need dairy in our human diets. Like, we just don't need it.
Bottom line, you don't need it.
Right. Yeah, we don't need it. We're not missing. But what about calcium? I hear people shouting in the podcast sphere.
Drink your milk.
Drink your milk. No. It's we are the highest dairy eating nation in the world, probably, and we have the highest rates of osteoporosis.
Right.
So it's not about that at all. And there are lots of other
Japan and
sources.
China countries where until recently there wasn't a lot of milk consumption. Although northern China, I think they consume a fair amount of milk. Mm. There really was not such a high rate of osteoporosis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Tom, we are so glad you're feeling better, having given up dairy and doing better with psoriatic arthritis. May you continue in wonderful health. And thank you very much for that very kind note.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Okay, we have an email from Joanne. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm 65 years old and I just had a second colonoscopy. My doctor said I do not have polyps. However, I do have small pockets. Sounds
otherwise
like
diverticulosis.
Right. His advice was, quote, eat more fiber, end quote.
Yeah.
Currently, I'm eating between 25 and 35 grams of fiber per day. The internet says to stay away from red bell peppers, cruciferous vegetables, nuts, seeds, etc.
No, but the internet is, you know.
Were you referred to the internet, Joanne, instead of a dietitian, nutritionist who's qualified
and a lot
to help you?
There's a lot of poor quality health news on the internet.
Absolutely.
We hope not to be part of that problem.
Right.
So, this until recently, it was thought that food particles, which, you know, intuitively it might make sense, is that you have these little pockets, and they're like little blind alleys where, you know, maybe peels like and seeds like maybe from bell peppers or from raspberries or something, they can get stuck in there, and they get stuck and then they become we call it a nidus, which is a focal point for bacteria to congregate and infections to occur. And so it's thought, don't eat those seeds, avoid those certain things. However, it never was recommended to get away from soft soluble fiber.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, they actually did some studies where they found that there was no relationship between consumption of these little tiny pits and peels and the incidence of diverticulitis.
Right, right. And Joanne has diverticulosis, so no diverticulitis is present.
Right.
So,
and you can happily go to your grave, as the majority of Americans do, with some degree of diverticulosis.
Exactly, especially over the age of 50, and she's 65. So that's number one.
It's sort of like, you know, diverticulosis the finding of diverticulosis in a 65-year-old is like the finding of acne in a, you know, 15-year-old.
Right, right.
It's just ubiquitous.
Exactly. Now, I want to counter this recommendation.
Okay.
You know, avoiding things staying away from red bell peppers, nuts, seeds, all of this. Those people with diverticulitis, the best diet I've ever seen and what we administer here for diverticulitis is the specific carbohydrate diet. This does not limit the use of nuts and seeds and these particular vegetables and fruits, which contain seeds. And they have a better than 90% success rate. The least amount of reoccurrence, and we've seen this. We have actual case studies.
And I just had dinner with a someone who was became a patient. I mean, I usually try to keep it separate, but you know, he's a personal friend, and he, you know, when I saw him, he'd had a couple of surgeries I think you know the person in question, and his symptoms still were not better, and they said, well, you know, we don't know what to do anymore. For you. I mean, I guess you could have a complete colectomy. You probably don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. But he was having infections and requiring antibiotics for his diverticulitis. And we said, you know, we did our thing. We had him on this specific carbohydrate diet, and we gave him certain supplements. And he's been fine to this day. Yeah, when he cheats, he feels it. But,
Right, and he's reported that to me directly on several occasions. He said, I already hear you telling me that this is what was going to happen or could happen. And so there it is. It's his own testimony a few times over. You know, to learn that lesson a few times, you really get it. You really get it.
Yeah.
So, Joanne, don't be afraid to continue eating your nuts and seeds and your vegetables and all these healthy foods.
For this person, without diverticulitis, I wouldn't recommend such a restrictive diet. It's not necessary.
It's not.
Yeah.
It's not. So continue eating healthfully the way you are.
Yeah, this is one of the misconceptions that periodically we're called upon to clear up.
Yes.
But, you know, the internet is sort of immortalized. So sometimes, you know, you'll see information that's obsolete on the internet. You
that's
can find
true.
It. And then you look at the, you know, the article was like 2003 or something like
that.
And that in this, in an evolving field like nutrition, that's an eon ago.
Exactly.
You know, that's they say the half-life of medical knowledge is like, well, they used to say 10 years, now they say 5 years, and maybe it's really 2 years, because what we believe gets overturned. And, you know, example of which is the low-fat diet.
Yeah, which still won't die. And, you know, American Heart is still clinging, or even American Diabetes Association, they are still clinging to these very old studies. It's unfortunate.
Yep.
It takes time. Okay, we have an email from Radula. I'm a 34-year-old woman, and about 3 years ago, I took two different medications together, lamotrigine and oral contraceptives, which were given to me for a misdiagnosis of PCOS. So later on, I found out that these things can actually interact, and I developed multiple symptoms like lightheadedness, memory, cognitive issues, anger, sleep issues, all of that. And then I took an Ayurvedic purgation, a purge. But this treatment, symptoms only got worse. However, over a period of time, all of the symptoms dissipated except memory and cognitive symptoms. Now, Radula is 34 years old, so you have to question why she's having these memory and cognitive symptoms. And since my brain function is not the same, I have constant issues with recalling names, remembering tasks. I haven't heard or read about a case like mine. Could I be suffering from a toxic brain or a chemical injury? Is there a supplement or treatment? This is workup number one.
Okay, so why do you take Lamictal? It's used for atypical depression or for bipolar disease, I believe.
Was prescribed for anxiety.
Anxiety, which is like, okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an anti-seizure medication. And will it have long-term damaging effects on the brain? I can't say it's one of those. I read an article about brain robbers, and I can't say it's one of those medications. I mean, if you take like long-term Xanax, Valium, Ambien, those medications can actually increase your risk of dementia, but I don't think Lamictal is among them.
So can antihistamines over a
period of time. Oh, yeah, certain antihistamines, yeah.
As well, which is interesting.
Especially the ones in the sleep remedies.
Yeah, yeah. I would invite Radula in for a consult. That would be something
to get
a full assessment.
How would that proceed? You know, what are some of the things to look at?
A thorough diet.
Nutritional levels.
Nutritional levels, deficiencies, anything like that. B12, starting with B12.
There might be some issues with B vitamin metabolism, because we know that the contraceptives have an impact on that, oral contraceptives. Lamotrigine as well, to some extent.
She might have a candida overgrowth from the oral contraceptives. That could cause plenty of brain fog and memory issues. We've seen people her age come in with tip of the tongue syndrome, or what was that person's name that I just met yesterday? And
she may have SIBO, which could cause brain fog.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, all of that. So that could be something. I can't imagine that this would be a brain injury, but anything that the GI tract is giving off is certainly going to impact the brain, or any kind of inflammation. We already know many inflammatory cytokines can cross the blood-brain barrier.
Right.
We've seen this in a study about lupus, actually.
Which originate in the gut.
Yes, yes, and all of these originate.
Now, there's a Parkinson's connection to gut, mm-hmm. the microbiome, so it assumes a lot of importance when it comes to brain disorders.
Yeah. So I would imagine a full workup, first looking for deficiencies, and then taking a full view of the diet, any other medication history, antibiotics, all of that, to see what's going on there. Oral contraceptives are also notorious for depleting B vitamins and vitamin C as well, and for causing things like depression.
Yep.
Great. You've got birth control, but now you're not in the mood because you're depressed. What have we done?
You know, I so often said, if they offered me a male birth control pill that's 100% effective but had all the side effects associated with what women are subjected to, no way would I take it.
Yeah.
This can
yeah.
cause depression. This can cause breast tenderness.
Mm-hmm.
This can cause loss of libido.
Nausea, bloating the first few months.
No way.
Yeah.
Men are terrible. It's like, we wouldn't put up with that.
We wouldn't put up with that.
It's your problem. You take the birth control pill.
Right. Radula, we wish you the best of luck. Wow. Okay. And this is actually an email from Delhi, India.
Delhi?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So thank you for listening to the podcast. All right. We've got one from Cindy.
I was going to say it's from Carnegie Deli, but they closed that.
No, they closed a while
ago. Okay. Because that's closer here.
It's right. Cindy writes, Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, I'm a 60-year-old female. I have a 60-year-old female friend who was recently diagnosed with endothelial dysfunction. Can you please elaborate on what endothelial dysfunction is and how common it is for someone with unchecked high cholesterol to end up with this condition?
Well, here's the thing. This, first of all, is not a diagnosis that is commonly offered by conventional medicine.
Right.
However, it is a concept that really should be viewed as a precursor to heart disease and strokes.
Yeah.
Is that, okay, what is the endothelium? Well, you know, so go ahead.
Yeah, the inner vascular, the smooth muscle, the vasculature, what happens is there can be dysfunction when there's inflammation. And this is not necessarily caused by high cholesterol.
It is not necessarily caused by high cholesterol.
Right.
It could be a contributing factor in certain cases, but old-fashioned term for this was hardening of the arteries.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't really harden, but they become less flexible, and they don't function properly. In other words, they don't.
Mm-hmm.
They lose their elasticity. They also lose their responsiveness.
Mm-hmm.
When you stand up, your blood vessels should clamp down so you don't faint. That's an endothelial response.
Yeah.
And when you exercise, they should open up to permit blood flow to the muscles that require more nutrients. So, you know, endothelial dysfunction can be measured through, there's a brachial test where they put a cuff on your arm and they measure how quickly the blood returns.
Mm-hmm.
That's not it's a great test, but it's not routinely performed. So I would have to know, the first question I would ask is, who gave you that diagnosis? Was it a holistic doctor who might be a little more creative about looking at these kind of things? Or is it a formal diagnosis from a cardiologist, say, mm-hmm. or a vascular surgeon? So the question is, there's a question.
How common is it for someone with unchecked high cholesterol to end up with this condition?
It depends, because, okay, so here's what I say. Sometimes cholesterol can be an accompaniment. High cholesterol can be an accompaniment of a bunch of bad risk factors, such as you're overweight, you're inactive, you have high triglycerides, which increase your VLDL, which promotes your cholesterol.
And suppresses your HDL.
Insulin resistance, blah, blah, blah. So when you put all those things together, it appears that the cholesterol is the cause of the problem.
Mm.
And so we artificially lower the cholesterol to fix the problem. But actually, we need to fix all the things that drive the cholesterol up.
Right.
Because we have people who are healthy in all other respects, but they have a genetically high cholesterol. We've seen patients with 300-400, and they have no plaque whatsoever.
They have no plaque at all.
Now, maybe if we used a more discriminating test, we could see before plaque develops that their endothelium is already not functioning that well. That would be a precursor. to atherosclerosis.
Yeah. All the blame can't be on cholesterol, and recent studies have shown that lipoprotein little a, C-reactive protein, especially high sensitivity C-reactive protein, are better indicators
for inflammation. I mean, the endothelium is a target of inflammation.
We have to think of cholesterol as a spackle. You have a crack in your living room wall. What do? You call the painter. What does the painter do first? He spackles it. Do you blame the spackle for the crack in the wall? The cholesterol is a repair substance.
Mm-hmm. And the body may mobilize cholesterol to repair, yeah.
Exactly. So the question to ask is, what caused that crack in my artery?
Right.
What caused that to happen? Okay. And for that endothelial dysfunction. So
I think you've been doing a lot of spackling.
Yeah, not yet.
Not yet. Because you're working,
framing.
You're building a house. Okay.
We're still framing. I don't want to spackle. I hate that.
You use these contractors because your husband's a contractor.
Right. So Cindy's HDL is 110 and her LDL is 130. And she's resisting statins.
Wait, her HDL is 130?
110.
110,
and her LDL is 130.
That's not that bad.
No, it's great. She says, I'm resisting statins in favor of bergamot in an effort to lower the LDL.
Well, again, bergamot is very healthy, lowers cholesterol, but it also has an anti-inflammatory effect on the arterial wall because it's a polyphenol.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would take a more comprehensive approach to reducing risk to this person. And by the way, she has a diagnosis of endothelial dysfunction. Does she have any coronary artery plaque? That's a pretty accurate predictor of coronary risk.
Yeah, this is her friend that has the diagnosis of ED, dysfunction.
All right, well, tell her friend.
She had a CT scan to check for plaque in her arteries years ago.
And
she had a score of 25 in one artery called the Widowmaker.
Okay, well, I heard that.
Yeah. Okay.
And let's speak, we're running a little long on this one. So let's break this question up.
Yeah.
What does it mean to have a calcium score of 25 in your widow maker? Da 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 da. That's pretty ominous.
Coming to you in part two.
Yeah. Stay tuned. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. Radio program at AOL.com is the destination for questions like today's.